far are you going?
About 30 years.
In this week's episode, Merry Christmas from the Anime of Yesteryear podcast, where this time we celebrate Hokuto no Ken. Whatcha! Doesn't cut out.
So you just moved over to your new compartment?
Yeah, all day yesterday from 8:30 a.m. to about 9 that night, and I was freaking exhausted. I think I'm getting feeling back in my legs now. Like I woke, like I didn't even go to class to get today either, so I missed 2 days of school.
And, that's not good. I did that early in the semester. That was fine. I mean,
I told my, because I've got the same comm professor for two classes, and I have him, like, I see him every single day. So Wednesday, I told him, or Tuesday, I told him, hey, I'm not going to be there Wednesday for your Wednesday rhetoric class because I'm going to be moving all day. And he was like, okay, cool. And then I went to send him an email because I made the decision last night that I wasn't going to plan on coming today, and I'd never bothered to email him about that, which I'm assuming he probably maybe might have figured it out, or he probably doesn't really care. I don't know. But, but it didn't help the fact that, you know, our cat, and we bring her up here in the apartment,
she didn't like it.
She's adjusting to it, and she decided to adjust to it between the hours of 1 a.m. and 5 a.m., where she walked around the house looking, sniffing, and crying at things. And we all heard her, so she kept me up and my mom up all night. And I realized it was 5:30 in the morning, and I was like, I am definitely not going to school today. There's no way. I'm not going to drive.
So did you sleep during the day?
Oh, I woke up like 11:30 this morning. Once I finally fell asleep about like 7.
Is that when the cat fell asleep too?
Something, yes, the cat finally shut up around 6 a.m. this morning. It's just like, it just gave up and it's like, alright, I'm done. I'm done looking at the house. I'm done checking things out and telling you people about it. It's like, I just imagine her meowing as just her saying like, hey, what is this doing here? What is this? This is not supposed to be here. Why is this here? Why? Meh. That's just, I'm imagining her saying that. And the mom's like, it's okay, baby. And I'm just like, shut up! I forgot to buy earbuds today, too, because I'm like, I'm not putting up with another night of this. There's no way in hell.
Maybe you can use the new charging headphones without a jack. At the Apple announced, like, there's not going to be a jack for the new iPhone or
the
something.
The iPhone 7, like, yeah, they're... Yeah, and people were upset about that. It's just like, well, it's moving the Bluetooth. There's no point of having a headphone jack to it if people are already going to buy their $150 Bluetooth product, that you might as well just wait for the $20 equivalent bootleg version that's going to be out in the market a couple months later.
Yeah. They I guess are assuming that all their customers that are willing to update to this thing are like rich enough that they're going to spend a whole bunch of money on this.
No, they're that diehard for it. I mean, John, now is the time for you to move from Apple to like Samsung or the Android market, because at least they have headphone jacks.
My iPhone, it won't even, like, I just got a message on it saying it hasn't backed up in 13 weeks. And it's like, my computer's too old to update iTunes anymore.
Well, yeah, it won't even update to the new version of iTunes because your computer's that old.
Yeah, so it's pretty annoying. But that's computer's issues for you.
Yeah, the same won't even happen for, what, 3 years at this point?
Oh, I don't know how long this has been happening, but yeah, I need to get a new computer soon.
Yeah. See, if people donated to our Indiegogo last year, you would have had a new computer.
We got just our few donations, but thankful for that much, at least.
Yeah, we got a few donations, and I'm super cool with that, so... Alright.
I just got an IM from NIV.
Oh, gosh.
He's complaining about you. He says, what's the Yonex problem? I don't remember pissing him off intentionally.
Here's my thing. He comes on the Skype chat, or the Slack chat, and is like, hey, you taking me to see Digimon? And I'm like, no! You know you want to. What did you say? Like, he's just, like, trying to think he can change my mind, like, oh, I know you want to totally take me to go see Digimon. No, like, I hate when people tell me that, like, oh, no, that's not what you really mean. Like, they know, like, they can read my mind and make my own decisions by telling me through this in a freaking chat. That's when I get pissed off. I'm like, look, I already told you no 5 other times, and then he wants to try to guilt trip me and to go see freaking Digimon with him, which, no, it's not going to happen. And then he wants to try to convince me that, like, oh, that's not what you really want to do. Oh, no, yes, it is what I really want to do, because it is me, and you are not me. Go fuck yourself. And then that's when I called him a, let's see what my proper term was. Should be up here in the chat. Oh, yes, a Bohemian Jedi Faith won't work on me, son.
Now they're talking about Gumball for some reason. And he says, all I know about Gumball is the gay sex scene. I doubt they have anything like that in Gumball. It's like a show for 7-year-olds on Cartoon Network.
It's just probably like jealous because they don't have that kind of content on Disney Channel live action shows that he wishes he could have. Yeah, you wonder why I don't want to take him to freaking go see. I don't ever want to spend time with him. You know what's funny? Yeah. Like, I thought about this yesterday in my 12 hours of manual labor to get my crap up my apartment. Not just my crap, which was actually the lightest part. No, it was the fact it was my parents and, like, my parents and my brother's stuff. Because I had to help everyone individually out. And then my parents were even like, yeah, you worked the hardest, we believe. And I'm like, thank you. And here I am thinking, like, lifting all this, like, you know, putting stuff on a dolly and carting it up three flights. And I'm just like, imagine if NIV, like, and there's no way NIV could do this, because if he can't even stand standing at his own job and getting paid to stand around and do nothing, and he complains how his feet hurts, there's no way he could do this kind of manual labor. Then he goes on their chat and complains about it, or screw him. Such a pussy, man. Gosh.
About this issue with his bicycle or... motorcycle or something.
Where no, he's getting decals
on it.
Yeah, he's getting a moped. I mean, which basically the moped, people here have like sort of a thing where like if you drive a moped, it's considered a DUI mobile. Because like if you have a DUI, you can't drive a car, but you're able to get a moped. I think they're putting in the law to try to change that. So then people are just going to look at TY as like this New England drunkard that got a DUI because he rides a moped everywhere.
Yeah, he says he was doing that because he didn't want to get a driver's license, but then those weren't fast enough, and now he's talking about getting a motorcycle, but he doesn't know how to deal with getting it registered or something. And
well, he's got to get a license, which is hard to do.
Carolina so that he can get away from the laws, but, like, doesn't he realize you need a driver's license in all 50 states to drive a car or a motorcycle?
What a damn moron. Seriously, gosh.
Okay, I guess we better talk about Fist of
the North Star. All right, yeah, so we're 9 minutes in, and our goal was to talk about Fist of the North Star.
That was the original intention of this podcast.
Yeah,
because we just bought the complete series DVDs on Amazon, because they had it on sale for $20 for the whole series.
It was back like in July. It was like $25 for the complete collection from Discotech, the last thing they put out of Fist of the North Star before the license lapsed. And it's basically like, what, 80% off or 75% off? So, like, you can own all 150-something episodes, 140-something episodes of Fist of the North Star for $25. 152, excuse me. You're not going to find a better deal than that anywhere else.
Yeah, it was as cheap as you're going to get this thing for, but it's already gone back up. And just to check what's on there now for $95 is the lowest that it's gotten.
Which is still not a bad price for all four seasons.
Yeah, that's true. It's a lot of episodes. That's from Deep Discount DVD. They have it for $95, and then for Amazon, they have it for $117. So,
yeah. I'm glad we struck while the iron was definitely hot, because I found out about it on Twitter, and I was like, yep, I know exactly what I'm doing right this second. And then we both did it. But I got my order like the very beginning of August, which is when I started going through the last arc. And I did like one episode a night, and then you just got yours like, what, a couple weeks ago?
Yeah, it took me longer because I think I ordered it later, but it finally get here recently, and I didn't watch the whole thing yet or anything. I've only seen it in a handful of episodes, but I've read the manga, so I know like the story and everything, and I watched the recap episodes from season 4. Yesterday morning, and so that gave me like a reminder of the various guys that fought Rao in the final arc of, you know, the original.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that was. I'm pulling that episode up. Let's see.
Because I watched the one there. I looked on the wiki for Fist of the North Star, and I have like a page that's just like filler, and it's got all the episodes that weren't in the manga or the clip shows. So,
yeah.
The first one I watched was like it was a clip show, supposedly, but it was like mostly just scenes from when the brothers were young, and they were, it was like, you know, where Rao climbed up the mountain carrying Toki.
Yeah.
After they got thrown down there by their master, mm-hmm. and told that only the one who climbs would survive and become the new heir to the Fist of the North Star. I think it was episode 105, and it had all of the different, different five stars that generals or whatever, but each of them had like an element that they represented. There was the clouds and the fire and the water.
Yeah, so it was
all of that. The map. I don't remember the fifth one.
So Fudo's the mountain. Yuria's the mother. Okay, so yeah, let me go through these episodes real quick. Okay, well, basically, we didn't do introductions. Hey, this is Anime of Yesteryear Podcast, if you've never heard this before. And we're going to talk about the last arc of Fist in the North Star. I am Dustin Ozeonic, and with me is my co-host, John.
Hi.
The other guy is talking, and we're, talking about Fist in the North Star, because we haven't, you know what? Hold on, let's do a Google search real quick.
You might have to search Cybernauts. It's probably been that long.
No, we did Arc 3 when we first started the Anime of Yesteryear Podcast. Fist of the North Star. I'm going to see what episode number that is.
It's been a while.
Yeah. Okay, so that was episode...
Probably 2 or 3 years.
Yeah, that was episode 14. And that episode is dated back in April 27th, 2013. So it's been over 3 years since we talked about Fist of the North Star. Because it's taken me that long to watch this last arc of Fist of the North Star.
Jeez.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then the Arc 2 review, I found it on the Cybernauts site. Let's see what time that one came out at.
That was like 2012 sometime, and then we did Arc 1 in like 2011 when we were still part of the Cool Kids Club.
This one's from September 21, 2012, and it's episode 14 of the Cybernauts.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
And was the other one also episode 14, just of the Anime of Yesteryear instead?
I never put that comparison together.
Okay.
That's interesting.
Let's search Kids Club Fist North Star. It's probably still on the Toon Radio site unless it's down.
It's probably gonna be on my blog.
Okay, right. ToonRadio.com, November 24th, 2011, Cool Kids Club Podcast. Episode 30, Fist of the North Star TV review.
Yeah, then we also did the movie also. I think it was like the next week or the week before. And that is going back 5 years ago.
The Cool Kids Club goes to defeat our brothers in the deadly martial arts, as we discuss Fist of the North Star TV, Years of War 3, and Chris Chan. Join Zach Freak, John Jones, Beamon Josh, Chibi Goku for this week's episode. Chibi Goku, we have not had him on in a long time.
And not sure if we ever will.
It's got a picture of like characters from Robotech, and it's got Min-Mei as CG.
I remember I did that. Oh man, those are the days.
This is 5 years later. We're finishing the
first
original
part
series.
The first star. I remember seeing part of the fourth arc like 3 years ago. And so one of them was basically how, there was one episode. Oh, let me see. I think it's this one. It's 84 where it's, the South Star Strikes Back, a Wind Brigade protects the last general. And, basically like Ken and the gang go, Bat and Lin go into a town where one of the people that, controls this town, which it basically at this point, like, Rao's forces are so spread out that, like, he's got, like, generals holding up towns so they can use it as enlistment places to join Kenno's army. And so he puts these people in charge that, like, the one episode is a guy that, he abuses the water privileges of the town where he basically takes, like, 20 baths a day. And then, like, he publicly bathed himself, so, like, out in the open, so people can watch him, like, use their water supply to clean himself. And then, like, if he happens to get dirty again, he kills someone, and he's like, oh, your blood got on me. Time to clean myself again with your water. And then I think Ken uses the technique to basically drown him in the tub.
The tub guy of Fist of the North Star.
Yeah.
Oh, my.
The other one I remember
must have called into Ghost after his attack.
Yeah, that may be. No, but the one I remember the most before I took this long sabbatical break was it's episode 86 where basically it's okay, so the first general is this guy called Hai Yui of the Wind, which he tries to take on Rao and his forces, and he ultimately loses and gets destroyed by Rao. So then his brother, who's basically, his name's Shirin, which is basically his power is to set himself on fire and attack Rao. But in that same episode, we have Ken, so the guy that controls this other town is, he drives like this dune, or this this Jeep, and he's like the worst driver you possibly met. Actually, no, probably NIV will be a worse driver than this guy. But that's beside the point. So, anyways, this general's just like, I am such a good driver. And he, like, hits things and, like, runs into stuff. And, like, his men are just, like, praising him for how great his driving skills are, even though he's all over the road. So then, Bat sees this, you know, this jackass, and then decides to just plow, like, you know, gun it and go right past him. So this general guy is so pissed off because Bat passed him, like, in the middle of the post-apocalypse, that he has his men find his dune buggy, and that's when we get the end of the dune buggy in this anime, was because they destroyed it. So, but the other memorable thing about it was the fact that the general will be driving in town, and he would basically, like, he wouldn't know how to use his brakes, so he would run his car into buildings. And then get out and start killing villagers and like, hey, who put this building here? And they're like, sir, that building has been there this whole time. You clearly can tell from the decay of the atom bombs that happened before this hellish earth happened that it was there before you ever got here. And he's just like, that's no excuse. They don't just kill like people.
Because there's a building there.
Yes, because there's a building there. And he's just like trying to blame the people that they put it in his way, even though he clearly like ran off the road and ran into it. And it's like, sir, you know, if you want to have any grievances on this, you can take it up to the city council that no longer exists in this city because of the, oh, I don't know, post-apocalypse.
Yeah, it's not like there's much of a way to air your grievances when
Yeah,
you
can't like suggest a building get moved or destroyed, you know, because you can't figure out how to drive around it because like you're that bad of a driver. But then Ken ultimately blows this guy up with his fist. And then during the same episode is when Sheeran tries to disintegrate Rao with his flames, but then Rao's just like, my martial art is way more powerful than your like flame powers, and then he winds up like breaking his neck or twisting his neck completely, and then he winds up dying in front of his men. But then Ken and the gang wind up running into this really big giant dude named Fudo. And he's actually, we find out later, he's one of the five generals of the South Star. And Fudo is this really, like, this burly, tall, huge guy. Well, they call him Fudo the Mountain because he looks like a mountain, basically. I mean, like, he's a walking, like, hulking dude that's, like, 15 feet tall, 3 tons. I mean, he looks after these kids in this orphanage.
He's like on a bed and he like falls through.
He's so freaking big, the bed collapses under him that he built himself, and then the kids fall on him and he just laughs about it like, "All right, kids, how many beds is that?" And one of them is like, "That's your 6th one." He's like, "Ha, I'm so fat."
Hey, you think he like accidentally crushed those kids in his sleep or something and caused the problems, but instead they're just like laughing about it.
They're just having a good old time on horse. Like, he puts them all on his back and they all go like in a big horseback ride thing in the desert, and you know, he's looking after the kids and protecting them. But basically, like, while like all this stuff is happening, so then we get introduced to this next general called Juza. Who is, he's Juza of the Clouds, which basically Juza is this guy who is like, you know what? I don't care about nothing. I do what I want. And so, like, the people that are, I'm trying to figure out the name of the other, the general that, I think he's like of the water or something that.
The old guy with the daughter?
Yeah, the old guy with the daughter, Tao. Uh-huh.
That guy, he like tries to get this cloud guy to fight against Rao.
Yeah, because Juza stands a chance against Rao, because apparently Juza was kicking Rao's butt before, like, when they were, like, teenagers and, like, and showing off in front of him.
Mm-hmm.
And so he obviously stands a pretty good chance against Rao.
Yeah, but he did a pretty good job in the fight.
Yeah, he did. So eventually,
this guy's just, like, laying around looking at the clouds, and he's just, like, very carefree, and he does whatever he wants.
He has his own palace in the middle of nowhere, which he basically goes around and saves women, and they basically, like, take, like, baths together, and he just goes in there and splashes them in water, and he's just like, yeah, these are all my bitches now, and, you know, I don't, why would I ever fight again? I just fight for the stuff I want. And then eventually, like, they convince him to go see the main general, which we don't want to spoil that yet, of the South Star. They reveal themselves to Juza. I didn't say who it was yet.
I think we already mentioned all the generals earlier, didn't we?
I didn't mention the general that they're all trying to protect.
Okay.
Which is the last one. Yeah, so then they reveal themselves, like, who they are to Juza, and then Juza has the will to actually fight for them. And he goes against Rao later. And of course, at the same time, like, Ken and the gang are still trying to get their way or make their way to the South Star, like, castle or whatever that this last general is being held, because it also pertains to Ken as well, also. And so Juza fights Rao and injects Rao's horse, Kokuo, and rides off. And it was a pretty cool battle, too. And then eventually, like, he came back, like, a day or so later, because even Rao's men were like, hey, we could, let's just, you know, okay, so he, you know, they took your horse, Rao. Big deal. We got, like, all these cars. We'll retrofit a car that can fit you, get you some new armor, we got enough fuel, and let's go after this guy. And Rao is just sitting there like, no, he's going to come back to me with my horse. You wait. And so he does, because apparently, like, in the fight, Rao was able to get a pretty good hit on him that causes, like, Juza to have some internal bleeding.
Yeah, and then he comes back and he's able to, like, do some damage to Rao's arm. He isn't able to, you know, to defeat Rao, of course.
Because Juza was trying to break off Rao's arm. Because he's just like, look, I may not be able to take you, like, your entire, all of you, but I can take your arm with me to hell. And then Rao was just like, no, I'm not going to have any of that. And even, like, he tries to get Juza to talk and interrogate him by having his, like, freaking fingers in the back of his neck. And Juza still won't say who the last general is. And Juza winds up dying, which actually when he does, he bleeds out. But the effect that they do is, like, it's kind of like his blood is like clouds, essentially. And it just kind of spreads out more and more. And then, you know, and then even Rao's just like, wow, you were actually a really good fighter. I really hated to kill you, but, I mean, you know, whatever.
Yeah, it's rare for Rao to acknowledge an opponent like that.
Yeah. Yeah, so anyways, like, yeah, so both parties wind up coming to the area where the last general is. I just know, well, on the way there, like, that's when, Rao's men capture two of, Fudo's kids. And they throw them in the sand pit, and then Fudo goes in after them. And then somehow, which was interesting, that Ken shows up at the last minute to, like, ultimately pick up Fudo out of the pit. And then they, like, kill and destroy all of Rao's men that are up there. Because I was interested in how that was going to go down. And then once they get near the tower of the south of the general, that's when Ken finds, you know, Rao, and Rao's just like, well, I'm going to get up there first and figure out who this general is before you do. And, of course, Rao has a huge head start because then there's more of Kenno's men, or Rao's men trying to stop Ken. Which, you know, Ken's just like, oh, great, here we go again. And then winds up taking, like, what was it, like a ninja he takes, like, some sort of a ninja assassin team. So they're ninjas, but they all are out there fighting together, like, in the open area to take out Ken.
Yeah, ninja and anime tend to not be all that stealthy. You know?
Yeah, it's like, we are Kenno's secret ninja army academy thing, and we are here to defeat you, even though you can totally see us, and that defeats the purpose of us being ninja. And then Ken winds up just like, whatever, get out of my way.
I guess there aren't many shadows to hide in a post-apocalyptic place.
Yeah.
But yeah, Ken is able to destroy all of Rao's men.
Yeah, that's true. So anyways, up in the tower, what happens is, at this point, we figure out who the last general is, which is Yuria. And the thing is, Yuria's identity in this arc was kind of already sort of spoiled to me years ago. Because it's just like, I kept reading about Fist of the North Star, and then this would come up. And I'm like, but I would always try to put it in my mind, like, oh, no, it's not Yuria. And then once I realized, like,
because he thought she had died at the end of the first arc.
Okay, yeah. So at the end of the first arc, they explain this. Because it got to the point, I was like, okay, well, how did she survive? So.
Right. It is weird. I don't know that this was probably not intentioned when they wrote the first arc, you know, like, I doubt they were planning to bring her back, but then they didn't come up with some way to explain why she was still alive. So it's like these five generals showed up and rescued her somehow, and helped them take her off.
So what happened was is that, like, I guess they got her somehow, because they showed this scene where, like, she jumps off Shin's castle at the very top. And then Shin goes down there to get her body back, or to figure out what happened to her. And she's laying on the ground, but there's all these other, it's the five generals of the South Star. And they basically say, hey, Yuria is essential to our cause, to the South Star, because little do you know, Shin, that Rao has assembled his men and called himself Kenno, that's going to rule this land. And we really need her on our side to build up our army to go against Kenno.
Yeah, they said something like, if you leave her here, Rao will come here and he'll take her from you.
Yeah.
And if she doesn't love him, then he'll kill her for her own safety, and then we can defeat Rao. And somehow this persuades Shin, even though Shin was all obsessed with her and wanted her to be his in the first arc.
Yeah, which is interesting, because even Shin was just like, well, I'm just gonna have to say, because I think at that point he knew Ken was coming, and he's just like, "Well, I'm just gonna tell Ken that she's dead," so then he doesn't really know the truth of what's going on, and then Shin stuck to that.
Yeah, because I guess he didn't want her to be endangered by Ken or something. I'm not sure.
Yeah, maybe they thought, like, you know, Ken's not powerful enough to take on Rao at that point.
Maybe. It's hard to know how they would know, like, what Ken was going to do next and how strong he was going to become. But
yeah.
A lot of this is, like, fated, you know? Like, there will be that star in the sky when someone's about to die. So, like, there's, like, an element of destiny to this world where everything that happens is, like, fated to happen.
Yeah, because, like, once... It's, like, apparently it was going back to, like, how, like, Toki and Rei died, where they saw the star of, what was it, like, Lingering Regret or something, which means, like, they were going to die.
Uh-huh.
Which apparently I think, like, I think at the end her star showed up. But we'll get to that in a sec. But, yeah, so going up to the castle, which this part is interesting even when I was watching and thinking about this, is there's a bit of a love triangle going on. Because here you have Ken and Rao going after Yuria. But then there's also this entity called Toh. And Toh is interested in Rao. So what happens is that Toh is taken up.
That's some childhood past, right?
He
had saved her or something.
Yeah, okay. So basically, Toh was in the armor of Yuria to try to convince, buy time for Yuria to escape so she can wait for Ken. Because that's her destiny. And so then eventually, like, Rao figures out that it's not Yuria behind the armor once he gets at the top of the tower and lay waste to all the ocean general guy's men or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And so then we get this whole, like, out of nowhere, like, love plot thing where, like, Tao has always loved Rao because Rao saved her from wolves. And then we get a flashback of Rao saving her from wolves, and then she's just, like, trying to, you know, thank him for his courage in saving him. And his response is just like, well, I was training, and that's part of my training is to kill these wolves, and you just happen to be there. And he walks off. He is such a dick. And even, like, they show even more clips of this, and he is, like, because both, like, Ken and Rao are, like, infatuated with Yuria, and then there's just Tao off to the side as, like, the third wheel. And so when I think of a love triangle, I think of it as, like, a triangle. You got, like, a point at the top, and that's Yuria, and you got the two points at the bottom. One's Ken and one's Rao. So what you do is you basically take a line, and you stretch it as far away from that point where Rao is as possible, and get to a good distance, and then you put a point there, and that's where Tao is at. That's how much she's worth to Rao. Nothing. So this is how it works. So basically, she is so worthless to Rao that she takes his knife from him, threatening to kill him, but then she winds up killing herself to show that she loves him. And Rao just goes, "You stupid bitch, why didn't you just freaking stab me? And if you're gonna kill yourself, you should have done a better job at it." And then he just walks away.
He's a heartless guy.
Oh, yes!
And when Toki dies, that's, like, the only time he shows emotion.
Well, we'll get to the other part he shows emotion, too, but just not for Tao.
Well, I guess at the very end, like, when he's about to die, but...
Yeah.
But, yeah. Other than that, you know, he's, like... He couldn't care less about Tao.
No. It was such this ham-fisted, love plot out of nowhere that I was like, is this really that important? Oh, well, she's tried killing herself, and she did a bad job, and Rao's walking away. Clearly, this meant nothing in the end.
I guess this is, like, to show that it's a good thing Yuria doesn't end up with Rao or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
Because Rao's such a bad person. Like, he dies saying, "I regret nothing." Like, he doesn't think I should have saved Tao. Like, that doesn't cross his mind in the final.
I live my life with no regrets. Really? Because I think there's a few you should probably look back on before you just call it at the end like you did. Yeah, even the story's just like, Oh, yeah, there was that Tao chick. Who cares about her?
Yeah.
Yeah, man. Okay, so then Akin comes up there. Well, first of all, it's the Ocean General guy. I can't even think of his name right now. But he tries fighting Rao.
The father of Tao.
Yeah, it's... Okay, I got it. It's Rihaku. So Rihaku tries fighting Rao, and then Akin winds up coming up there and taking on Rao. So Rihaku basically, like, uses his strategy of, like, ambushing and, like, traps and stuff to capture Rao. Which Rao is just able to see this crap through anyways, because he just punches, like, through most of the traps. And then Rihaku is just like, well, how did he know that? It's just like, you're dealing with Rao. Like, of course he's going to punch his way through anything.
This guy seems to, like, really underestimate Rao, because he has all these other generals that he thinks are going to be able to
beat
Rao.
Yeah, like, he's supposed to be, like, the greatest general of, like, you know, of Earth, and then, like, he's shocked when Rao, like, uses his ultimate strength to punch through a wall that he sets up. It's just like, you didn't really see that coming, like, that was going to hold him. And then, yeah, so then Ken comes up, and then that's when, like, it starts getting really good, because Ken has an upper hand called, like, what was it, transmigration or something? Which he's able to teleport him, like, he's able to use Deep Sorrow.
Because of all the people that have died around him throughout the series.
Which he's able to adapt to other techniques from those people, too. So he's got, not only does he have Hokuto Shinken, but he's got Nanto Seiken. And the type of Nanto Seiken that Shin uses, Rei uses, Shu uses, Souther uses, and then there's also like what Toki, and then also Ryuga as well. Because Ryuga was part of that montage also, even though Ryuga didn't really last long. So he's able, Ken has the upper hand in this fight already. And, eventually, so then what happens is that I think it was, like, Rao that hits one of Rihaku's traps, and then the whole place, like, caves in, and then Rao, you know, gets out of the rubble, and he's, like, 30 stories down to where Yuria is, and of course he just jacks her, puts her on the horse, and goes back to his castle. But because of the castle collapsing like that, this puts Ken in a state of blindness for some reason, which doesn't really stop him from trying to find Rao anyways. It doesn't really make any sense. And like, because what happens is like, you know, he tries to go after Ken, Rao at his castle. And of course he's blindfolded. Or not blindfolded, but he's just blind. And so anyways, like, he's walking through the desert, and he's taken out all of, like, more of Kenno's men while he's blind. And basically he's blind just to be like, well, you know, one dude that I fought and respected was blind, and this is how he got through life, so I'm going to do the same thing. I'm like, you have a martial art technique that you can be able to make people speak and not be blind, but yet you don't use it on yourself.
I guess he figures, like, he's so much better than Rao and Rao's men that he doesn't even need to be able to see to defeat them.
No, it puts a new spin on, well, this fight's so easy, even I can do it blindfolded, or I can do it with my eyes closed.
Yeah.
Rao, I can beat your butt with my eyes closed. Oh, the move was called Unconscious Transmigration. They put a pair of balls on migration, damn it! I had to say that.
I'm looking at a picture of a migration with a pair of balls on. Damn, troll terrorist and cyber vermin.
Cyber vermin!
Cyber vermin!
Gosh, I'm glad I brought water with me to drink. My throat is dry. Oh, that's better.
Lately, the thing they've been doing to mess with them is that they keep making fun of the people who died at the Alamo.
Oh, really?
He keeps saying, don't you dare mess with the Texas Martyrs. There's like a troll name called the Texas Farters, and that one makes him really mad.
Well, what was it? You posted up the latest video, and it said, like, instead of Alamo, it's Alamo.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I haven't even heard, I haven't listened to Ghost in about a week, so I'm behind.
It's mostly Nickelback splices still, but there's some other good stuff that's happened. But
okay.
Just call his brother, evil brother called Shadow Guy that showed up in the newest episode. I don't know if that's like someone who's actually related to Top Guy's gimmick.
Jeez.
Anyway, back to Fist of the North Star. So like he was going through the desert killing people blind.
Yep, being blind with his eye. It was so easy to walk through the desert. He did it with his eyes closed. but then he apparently gets wind. I think it was probably one of the armies that he he goes to Rao's castle, and by the time he gets there, he goes to some place where he thinks Rao is at, and then people at Rao there are just like, Rao's not here. Rao went to go back to where you came from, and he's fighting Fudo as you speak. So then Kent's just like, great, I walked out of here for nothing. Yeah. So I'm going to go back the same way, blind again. Okay, so...
it can get around well for a blind man.
Yeah, okay. So here's another thing. So he fights these, like, monks that they apparently use sound to distract Ken. They belong to some mountain. They're waiting for Ken's army to leave. And they basically, like, there's, like, 20 or 30 of them, and they circle around Ken, and they use, like, this, like, rattling, like, these metal, like, poles. and they're basically using sound to distract Ken. Because if they have all this sound going on, he can't pinpoint where they're at. So Ken decides to make himself deaf by putting his thumb near his temple or his ears, so he drowns out the sound. So not only is he blind, but he's deaf, fighting people that use sound as a martial art technique, and he wins. And then after he's done, he just pokes the sides of his head, and then he's able to hear again.
It's that easy to hear, heal his ears. Why not just do his eyes?
Yeah, just do his freaking eyes. Yeah, and then they're just like, he doesn't finish him off though. He's just kind of like gets it. Like, he's just like, all right, I'm just gonna punch you. You guys aren't that big of a threat. And then they're like, we're sorry we messed with you. Please, it's an honor to fight you, kind of thing or whatever. And then he goes. And so then he's running over to where to where Rao and Fudo are fighting. Which we wind up getting a backstory on Fudo. So. What was interesting in the battle with Rao and Ken was the fact that Rao started to experience what's called fear. And his legs started shaking, and he's just like, what's wrong with my body? Why is it trembling like this and shaking? And then Ken's just like, Rao, that's called fear. That's what you're experiencing because I'm freaking you out. And then Rao's just like, there is no fear in the greatness of Rao and whatever. Rao's idea is, he's going to drink the blood of a demon, which apparently, if he drinks the blood of a demon, that's enough power there to fight Ken and not be afraid of anything. So then he fights Fudo, which apparently Fudo's backstory was that Fudo was like this bandit that went around and just killed and destroyed whatever he wanted and whatever he pleased. And he wound up coming up to and stealing from the Hokuto... the temple when they were younger, and Rao, that's when Rao first met Fudo, and Rao was too afraid to fight him. And Rao was just like, I never want to feel that kind of fear again when I fight anybody. So in a way, like, Fudo's going back to his old self that he cast aside, because he winds up like knowing what compassion is, because Yuria protects a puppy in some sort of temple that she's guarding from him. And he's like, oh, this puppy is so precious to Yuria. Why is it so precious? And that's when he, like, understands the preciousness of life, because he never did. And he basically, like, locked all his old gear up in this old, like, abandoned, like storage closet, which was probably, like, a boat or something, that he put, it like, a chain lock on in the middle of nowhere. So that's where they do this battle at. And so then from there, in the battle, like, Rao draws a line in the ground, and he basically tells his men that if he crosses this line, going backwards and retreating, that they must kill him. So in the battle, basically, Rao's doing everything he can to try to take Fudo down, and Fudo is just not going down. And then what happens is that Fudo gets a giant harpoon. Oh, I got some sort of error about reconnect your drive. That's not important. So then...
Is this still recording?
Yeah, we're still good.
Okay.
Yeah, cool. We're still recording. Okay. But no, Fudo gets a giant harpoon in his gut, and then about 10 more after that, which is what takes him down. And then, because he got this because apparently Rao crossed the line, but they didn't kill Rao. They were supposed to, that he told them to do. They wound up killing Fudo, and they're like, but boss, who's going to take you out? Like, we're doing this to protect you. And then Rao just goes on a rampage and starts, like, punching all of his men to death because they disobeyed him. And then that's when we get to see, like, sort of the falling apart of Rao's army.
Rao has some sort of, like, complex about fear. Like, when they showed the scenes of them as kids training, like, they had to fight the tiger. And with Kenshiro, who's so powerful that the tiger...
Yeah.
Fear him so much that it resigned itself to defeat, but like with Rao, it was afraid it would lose, but it thought it had a chance, so it tried to fight him, but then Rao won. So like Rao, yeah. I guess he wants to be like Kenshiro, where he can make everyone like back down and immediately mm-hmm. and acknowledge his power, because he wants to be like seen by everyone as the strongest. He's got like an inferiority complex, because he got shafted as the successor to Fist of the North Star,
well,
or the Hokuto no Ken Star.
Yeah, only like Toki was the one that was like, yeah, he can kind of deserve it, it's cool. And Jaggy was the one that like basically like whined and complained about it. But with Rao, with him losing succession, he's just like, I can get this back. Like, all I gotta do is defeat Ken. And then I'm the successor. So as long as I can defeat Ken.
The guy
Ken,
was gonna stop him. Their boss, and he's gonna like make him lose his arms, but then he has a heart attack and dies like right before.
Yeah, their master is the one that has a heart attack and dies in his match with Rao, and he almost punks out Rao too.
Yeah, so Rao, he's like got this thing about he thinks it's shameful to retreat, I guess, and so he wanted his men to shoot him, but they shot Fudo instead.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, so apparently, like, you know, Rao retreats back to his castle, which is where Yuria has been the entire time. And Yuria starts healing Rao's men there that are in pain, and they wind up taking her side because they're like... Because Yuria's thing is the fact that she's got this mother-like caring ability about her. Because she doesn't have really like a force, she's more like the mothering moral support that men need. Or these,
it's
or
weird
the men under her
need. A general...
Yeah.
When she doesn't really fight, she's more like a healer character.
Yeah, she's
strange,
like... You go into a battle, and you've got like, you know, it's kind of like D&D campaign. You gotta have someone that's gonna pull tank. Or in World of Warcraft terms, you got someone that's pulling tank for you. The big guy that can take all the damage, which is Fudo. And then Yuria's like the mage that's gonna be back, or the healer that's gonna be in the back healing people from a distance, and making sure your tank's got enough health. And you got someone that's got to do long range attacks, and so yeah, like basically, if they went out, if this anime became like a D&D campaign or a quest or something, then that's how it would be. So it makes sense in that aspect, I think.
They kind of have to have a character like this after, you know, they kill off a character who's not like, you know, just all force, more healing technique or something.
Yeah.
So I guess they decided, well, and she can be like a big part of this final arc here. I guess I don't know. I guess maybe she was popular with breeders in Jump or something. I guess it was an interesting twist for her to be alive.
Yeah, I mean, like, that's why I was trying to make this as, like, much of a surprise as possible for me. And it still felt, like, really cool that, like, oh, you know, here I am. And, yeah, I this is something I've known that was going to happen. It's just a matter of how it was going to be introduced. Was Yuria coming in into the show, and when her big reveal was going to be. And, like, I can't... Like, I imagine how awesome that might have been, like, when you watch this first on TV and no one knew what was going to happen.
And he's such a fan.
Yeah. Oh, that's true.
I mean, that would have been quite the surprise, I bet, when it first aired.
Is that your new dog?
Yes.
Oh, that's cool.
Not as loud as the other one, huh?
You know, we haven't had our mascot on the show for a while, the bird.
It was screaming at the start, but I guess I had the door closed enough that it's like not being picked up, huh?
Okay. Yeah, so then we get to the point where, like, okay, so this is another thing about Rao, was the fact that he was wanting to have sadness in order to have the same kind of sadness Ken does so he can beat him. And so his only thing was to try to kill Yuria. And so then he can experience sadness. But then he's got, like, Kenno's troops there that are like, no, if you're going to kill anyone, please kill us. As a way to try to, like, you know, sacrifice himself so then Yuria can still live. I'm just thinking, yeah. And so then, like, it gets... So then Ken's eyes open up at some point, and they wind up going to... Yeah, so then Ken realizes he's got to go get Yuria, and then he winds up... No, Rao's horse comes out to him, and then Ken hops on and leaves the kids behind, which they wind up coming with him anyways. To go out to where their school was, like, that's still, like, damaged from all the rubble of the post-apocalypse. So then when Ken gets there, like, Yuria is kind of, like, in this unconscious state, and then they both fight, and he also gets to the point where, like, in the fight, like, it goes down to, like, basically them just punching the crap out of each other, because they try their tricks, and they're like, you know what, let's just beat the crap out of each other, like, schoolyard fight, and just see how far we can go. And then, so then Rao does this thing where he has his red aura around him expand, and then they're all, like, freaking out, like, oh, shit, no, he didn't, like, when Ken starts walking in his aura. And, I don't know if you remember that from the manga or not.
Yeah, that doesn't happen, I think.
Yeah, because, like, he has an aura around him to try to intimidate Ken, and then Ken just starts slowly walking into it. And then basically to end the battle, like, that's when they realize that, like, Yuria wakes up, I think. She wakes up somehow. No, Lin yells Yuria, or she yells Ken, and that's what wakes up Yuria. And then we come to find out that, yeah, so Rao's not entirely such a bad guy because he wound up helping Yuria live longer because she's got some sort of disease in her. I guess it's like, apocalyptic cancer or something. Radiation cancer. Nantosakan cancer. I don't know what it is, but, like, she's already, like, cause she was up there with Rao, and she was just like, you know, do with me what you will. And she coughs up blood in front of him, and he just, like, feels really bad for her. And he winds up, like, prolonging her life by, like, maybe a few more years. So that's when we get to the whole final thing where, like, you know, Rao basically raises his fist to the heavens and proclaims that he has no regrets in this life, and then somehow transcends into heaven somehow. And then it goes to this thing. Yeah, it basically just goes to the end where, like, you know, they say their goodbyes to Lin and Bat, and then Yuria and Ken and Koku ride off into the sunset. And then we get an episode of basically, like, a recap of how, like, all the people met, which basically, like, because it was explained by Rikaku when they brought Yuria to school and Rao was just kicking the crap out of Ken, or, like, when they were kids. And Yuria had this ball. So then basically, like, Ken hands the ball back to Yuria, and Yuria had an issue, like, expressing emotions. But because of him expressing or giving the ball back to her, she, like, winds up smiling for the first time. And so they basically...
this was in the final episode.
Yeah, yeah. So this is, like, when they kind of explain that, like, you know, yeah, so Rao kind of introduced her to where they're... to them both, but then Ken was the one that opened up her heart. Which I thought was pretty... which is pretty sweet. And...
yeah. Look at all that. All the characters dying, a montage of the last part.
Yeah, that's pretty much how that's the end of Fist of the North Star. At least the first arc.
They tried to summarize it all in the last episode.
Yeah, it was a very brief thing. Like, it wasn't like that four part thing they did before the fourth arc.
Right, it wasn't.
Yeah, they basically went
long. It was just one episode.
Yeah. Yeah, like, there's basically like five or six, no, there's like six episodes where they do a recap of, like, every single little bit of arc. Because there's one that's, like, you know, going from episode 78 to 82. Yeah, it's basically like, oh, let's recap Shin's thing. And then there's recap of Rey, and there's recap of Yuta, which I don't barely remember anything of Yuta. Well, I think I fell asleep through some of those episodes, to be honest. I think I remember putting it in the podcast. And then there's a part of Shu, and then...
because I was just recapping things that already happened.
Yeah. And then there was a part with, they explained Shu, and then the battle with Souther. Because that was, like, really the last big recap episode. And then they did one about, like, the generals that they fought before the final battle with Ken.
Yeah. That one gave, like, a brief summary of, like, mm-hmm. you know, there was the guys with the fire arrows. Like, one of the generals that attacked him before he fought Kenshiro and
mm-hmm.
the mountain and the other ones that were later on.
Yeah.
And, it was a decent episode, I guess, but... I had to, you know, summarize a lot of stuff quickly, but they did it well enough.
Yeah. So it's kind of like that placement before Fist of the North Star 2 starts. But really, like, if you wanted to get, like, the whole complete thing, like, right at episode 108 where it's farewell to the brothers of the North Star, they're beyond love and sorrow, like, you don't need it, like, you don't even have to worry about the next episode. You can just jump right into 110, which is when Fist of the North Star 2 starts. Which,
yeah.
I am taking a pretty long sabbatical on that before we ever... It'll be a while before we cover Fist of the North Star 2.
Hopefully
not another 3-more-year break, but we'll see.
Yeah. So, how long is the last season?
The last season goes from... I think it's 42 episodes. Because it starts at 110.
Did they just change the numbering because Rao died and they felt like that was like the conclusion of the original story?
I don't know, I'm just going off...
Because the manga just kept going, you know? Like, it's weird.
Oh, yeah, I remember...
Fist of the North Star 2.
Yeah, I remember you telling me that, like... Yeah, but with this one, it's just like... Yeah, it goes from episode 110 to 152, so that's 42 episodes right there. And... I mean, maybe we can probably split this up into, like... 21 episodes. Like, we just review the first 21 episodes of Fist of the North Star 2 and then do the next part, like, a later time or something. Because, like, this arc was, like, you know, alright, so we got... I started at episode 83. 103. So that lasted, like, 26 episodes. Wow, really? I guess that's right.
Have you seen the live action Fist of the North Star?
Yeah, I've seen that one. Yeah, with Gary Daniels.
I haven't seen it yet. Is it, like, really bad?
You know, it's interesting.
Do they adapt the story well, or...?
Sort of?
I guess that's just something I'll have to see for myself.
We'll have to do another At the Anime Movies again. We'll have to bring Sean Ryan on for that, because that's something that they reviewed, that Kim and Kevin Gray reviewed, like, a very, very long time ago from Method of Madness. And, like, I'd like to bring Sean Ryan back on to talk about more. I know we got Guyver 2 to review. I haven't forgotten about Guyver 2.
Yeah,
I just...
Dark Hero.
Yeah.
Title for Guyver 2, but yeah, we did the first one, I think, early 2015.
Yeah, we did the first one early. Yeah,
been a year and a half.
That's true. So it's high time we bring him back on to talk about Guyver 2.
Have you seen about Rao, the Legends of Dark King thing?
No, I have not seen that yet. I still really want to.
It's like they always have it on all, but it's always still expensive, you know, on Right Stuff, like, because they have it. There's like two different versions. There's one that's sub only, and that one. It's like sometimes, but the dub one is always like $60 or something. It's only 13 episodes.
Yeah, I really, I think it's like a 12 or 13 episode OVA.
Yeah,
and I really, really want to watch it, but I would love to own the dub. I don't know why they're not both together, but like, yeah, they charge so much for the dub, which is ridiculous.
And even it was really sub only in September 2009, and then they really. Dub the next year in July 2010. So I don't know why they didn't just dub it the first. I mean, it's an ADV dub for Sentai film.
Oh, so that's true. Yeah, yeah. I mean, there's also...
So it's going to be a different actors than
well,
the,
there's
the,
also,
the dub for the show.
There's also New Fist in the North Star. Like, that's something we probably need to review eventually before we get to the Fist in the North Star 2. Like, I have that on DVD.
I watched that a while back. It was pretty awesome.
Okay, that's good to hear.
It's brief. It's only like 3 episodes.
Yeah, that's what I heard.
An original story, because I didn't remember it happening in the...
Yeah, it seems
manga,
like it's a very...
all these spin-off mangas that they made.
Yeah, it seems like it's an original story. It's not tied to the... like, it's kind of its own thing, like a side story. It's the way I take it.
Yeah, you can watch it and boil the North Star 2, even though I think it's set after it, but it's, like, not really connected.
I thought it still took place in the original, the original Fist in the North Star.
Well, on the Wikipedia page for it, which, you know, take it with a grain of salt, it says...
Yeah.
Set sometime after the conclusion of the original manga, and it says it's based on a Fist of the North Star, The Cursed City.
So maybe
which
it's...
was released in 1996, and then the OVA was released in 2003.
It was released
so it's got, like, much more modern anime.
Yeah. He said it was released in 2000?
2004.
2004, okay.
They've got on the reception part of the article, they have a review from Toon Zone of all places. Toon Zone praised it, saying, "Kenshiro is in fine form. Although the story may not blow you away, it's plenty adequate to support the action." This is a review of something good from Toon Zone. That's a rare situation. I don't think Chris Wood works at Toon Zone anymore, though, so they probably would have Jacob Pascal review it if they did. He would say, "Not good enough. Needs more."
Yeah. He would have never said Fist the North Star. He would have said, like, Hokuto no Ken, and then put, like, two N's at the end of Hokuto no Ken, or, like, no, Hokuto would have, like, two O's. Like, well, this is how you really pronounce it in the Japanese version, because I know everything about the Japanese version, because I am Jacob P. Pesco. Please admire my hentai images on my Twitter account. Thank you. That's how I imagine he would talk in real life.
He'd probably buy like a female Ken figure or something if it was.
Oh no, he'll buy one of those female Kenshiro fan art images, or fem Ken or something, and then
like he did with the Luffy female Luffy figure that he.
Yeah, I as soon as I saw that somebody posted up an image of like off Amazon, which was like a One Piece skin, but it was so like appealingly pornographic in terms of like Nami like in very skin tight clothing with like a huge camel toe in her shorts when she's like bending down, but her butt's hiked up there. Like a dog or something, and then it's just like all this shading for to show how big her boobs are that you can see between her legs. This is a skin that goes on a PlayStation 4. No, somebody was looking up No Man's Sky.
You said that was Jacob.
Yeah.
You liked it in the chat.
Yeah, it was someone was looking up No Man's Sky stuff on Amazon. That was the fourth result. And then I was just like, hey, there's, and then I responded like, there's somebody I know that would probably dig this. Am I right? And then I entered Jacob's Twitter name. And I did it just to see if I can get a response from him, but he never said anything, which, what a punk.
He doesn't respond to that anymore.
Yeah, well he's got us banned or blocked on Twitter. Cause we're blocked on Twitter from him. I mean, yeah, it sucks, but like, can you blame him?
No.
Yes. It's like, yeah, we're embarrassing you because you're in a freaking embarrassment. And then he goes on, what was it, Ranger Board or that one forum that he's part of? And, like, starts mentioning all those things about how much... No, what was he was trying to justify, like, how there's nothing wrong with, like, the stuff he likes and how revealing statues are and how it's not objectifying women. Because it appeals to his likes and it's not harming anyone. And people were just like, I missed you when you were an animation fan. Like, what happened to you, Jacob?
It was in the Dragon Ball Z. He actually is like posting, like, here's the key animator for the first scene. and here's everything else he's worked on. And it's like, usually he's posting all this, like, the details of Dragon Ball Super. And this time he's like, hey, check out these Dragon Ball statues I bought. And it's like, Android 18, and it's like, ultra exaggerated anatomy. And then this other guy's on him and saying, like, oh, how could you buy this stuff? Like, why would you waste $200 on this statue? And, like, how do you find this appeal? Like, I got into this big long argument about it on there.
Yeah, it was funny.
he derailing threads.
He's now known for that. He's just doing it somewhere else other than Toon Zone. Oh, well, I guess Sketch still posts on there or something. I don't even keep... The last time I was on Toon Zone was basically to try to troll that Light Lucario girl about something.
Really go on there very much anymore, but it's still a thing. Josh still does those talkbacks on the Shinobi Hunter Hunter.
And then complains how, like... and then complains how, like, he doesn't... He's just like, yeah, we don't get the kind of... traffic these talkbacks used to get like 10 years ago or something.
Yeah, these days they get like 4 or 5 responses. They used to get 4 or 5.
Yeah, and they're like, and they're freaking like, Gato Matt's like response, like, yeah, this was a good episode.
Yeah, that and like Lucario and like maybe 2 or 3 other people, but it's not a big war anymore. Everybody's moved over to Twitter, you know, it's live.
Yep.
I think that somebody found that guy, William C. Mon, who used to be the moderator from the Toon Zone, Shinobi board. They found his Twitter, and like, these days people, you know, even the people who used to run that stuff, they just, like, they realized that tweeting and not dealing with having to moderate talkbacks or whatever.
Yeah.
Because that guy would have to, like, step in and block a bunch of talkbacks all the time, because there would be, like, 4 or 5 people making talkbacks for one. And he would have to, like, decide which one is the legitimate talkback. Like, even in the late 2000s. And now it's, like, nobody even cares enough to post in one talkback anymore.
Yeah.
That site's falling off the rails. So I guess we're kind of getting into closing remarks territory here.
Yeah, I was actually just trying to modify the your volume up a bit, because you're kind of talking a little bit quiet.
Okay. It has been saying that I've got some sort of connection issues, but...
Yeah, it's you're kind of cutting in and out, but however, it still functions way better than Skype.
Uh-huh. That's the amount of problems we had at Skype.
Yeah. This is audio I can work with, so I won't even worry about it. So what do you got for closing remarks?
I was gonna look for something from Ghost here. There's not really much to say about, Christian anymore, because everything he says, he's paid to say.
Yeah.
So he makes a video still, but they're all like, just, stuff that a troll has paid him to do.
What was that one about? Like, he did one recently about how it was him, like, reading some message off of going against the Kiwi forums, the Quickie forums.
I didn't read that one. I didn't see that one yet. But it was, like, message to the trolls or something, right?
Yeah, something like that, yeah.
Okay, I found one from Ghost here. Wasn't I just talking about killing this fat, diabetic, cheese-chugging Kim Jong-un today? Now he's testing nukes. Coincidence? #ghost. Like, he doesn't realize that the North Koreans have had a nuclear program for 15 years or something, like...
And they're finally getting it off the ground.
He thinks that this guy, like, they rarely even have electricity in North Korea, you know, like, only for Kim Jong-un. Like, they're not tuned in to the True Capitalist Radio program. They're not really close to saying... I love how Ghost will sometimes believe that he's, like, totally famous, and he thought that Kanye West called him a couple weeks back.
Yeah.
Because someone played a Kanye song when they called him up, he was like, that goddamn Kanye West is calling up and playing his songs. How dare he?
I can't think of anything.
I guess we could talk about the thing with the YouTube monetization.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one. So, apparently YouTube, I think, honestly, is a great thing. Thank God. And maybe in some aspects, but, like, YouTube is basically going through all these people that make... Because it seems like whatever you put out on YouTube, there's always an ad for something because it's how you get monetization and get paid for it.
They've added, like, a lot more ads recently. And
they're everywhere.
They're trying to make stuff... They're trying to make stuff, like... more child-friendly. As they introduced something called YouTube Kids. And now there's, like, before every video, even stuff that didn't have ads previously, a 5-second ad, at least.
Mm-hmm.
And, but they started to add, like, these various conditions where they say things like, if you talk about a controversial subject... that includes, like, politics.
Mm-hmm.
It includes, you know, personal stories about suicide or rape or anything that could upset a small child. You can't make money off of it anymore. So if, like, someone flags you for it or whatever, then they just take off the monetization.
Yeah.
Maybe they manually review everything themselves. So I don't know how they decide what is and isn't. Monetizable.
The thing is, this is cutting out a lot of the crap. Like, people's videos are still up there. They can still be viewed. But people are, it seems like the people that are doing this are only doing it just to get monetized and get paid for it. If your video, it's like, oh, and they're upset over it. It's like, well, isn't getting the word out more important than you making money off of it? If it's really that big of an issue? But apparently they're whining and crying, like, they think, like, their video's being taken down. Which is what YouTube used to do, which they still kind of do it anyways.
I think it was like a lot of the gamers got in trouble because it said you can't swear in the videos anymore and make money. So it's like they're treating it like the entire audience is children and it, like a lot of people, yeah. You know, watching YouTube are not children. Like you would think that the ads would generate more money from adult movies or... for cars or whatever that children can't buy. It's like,
yeah.
It just seems weird to me that they're putting such an emphasis on making money on children. They're gonna, like, screw over a lot of their big content providers who are just gonna move over to some other sort of site that you can make money off of. You know, there used to be Blip, but I guess that went under. I don't know what else there is these days for sites that monetize videos.
Yeah, it seems like Vimeo is about probably the next best video thing.
Maybe so.
Yeah, I mean, it's the fact it's like I would click on a video, and it's mostly like I thought it was a great way to go after these clickbait articles, like these clickbait videos where people like post up an image, it's bold caps, and it's like top 10 such and such or top 10 greatest or worst things. And the people who make those are only doing them to get money, and then they get, like, a ton of views out of it. Which is, again, really, really stupid. And so now it's just, like, I feel like the people that are doing it just to try to get money are now getting screwed over, thank God. And, you know, yeah, there's some things, but at the same time, it's like, you know, yeah, okay, you're not getting, your video is not getting monetized the way you want it to, you're not getting money for it, but at least it's still up there. So people can watch it without any ads, without having to worry about skipping an ad and like, oh great, okay, I want to get to this video, but I gotta watch a stupid ad. If it's not there, it's quicker for them to get interested in the video more, so then you have more to say. But no, the people want to complain about it because they're not getting paid for it. Which shows that they only made the video to get paid, and then we're trying to make it into this big thing about how they think like, oh, they're subjugating against me, they're going against me, they're, you know, against, like, you know, I consider this hate speech. I'm like, no, you consider it money speech. Because you're more interested in your video making money than it is on, like, how important you think it... I understand what your content is and that it is important, but you're complaining that you're not getting paid for it, which that was the ultimate goal to begin with.
I saw that Ghost was ranting about PewDiePie, because apparently this guy has been having, like, children come to his yard or something.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, schools are taking children there, and they're like, look, this is most famous man in Scandinavia. He makes millions of dollars on YouTube. And then, so like, there's like field trips of like 5-year-old kids out there in the yard, and they're like, wow, this is the mansion of a real life superstar who's famous on YouTube for playing video games. I want to be just like him.
You're lowering the bar for children not to apply themselves and just to whore themselves out for entertainment, like what you did, PewDiePie. Well, what was it? Like, didn't he get banned from Twitter because he said he wanted to join ISIS?
That's what I thought I heard.
I thought he was, like, completely banned from Twitter because he made some off-comment joke about him wanting to join ISIS.
That's funny because they let real ISIS terrorists stay on there, but they get rid of people
make jokes. That doesn't make any sense.
Like, there have been people who, like, gone on to do mass shootings, and then they find their Twitter, and it's filled with pro-ISIS messages, you know? And it's like they let that slide, but they don't let someone who's, like, a famous... obviously, PewDiePie is not going to join ISIS. You know, he's not a Muslim, for one thing.
No, the Muslims will not let them in. So.
Yeah, I think they would like try execute him if he tried to join. They would be like, "What are you
like,
doing?
Can you grow a beard?" Oh no, you can't. Execution.
That would be like their top viewed video on the ISIS YouTube if they like beheaded PewDiePie.
You know, as wrong as as bad as this might sound, I probably might watch it.
I have a feeling you're gonna say like maybe they should do that.
Yeah. What was it? I think someone on YouTube uploaded like the execution of Saddam Hussein. Like I saw that. Like they basically like had a video of them hanging a guy, and I think it was Saddam.
Yeah, that was like publicly shown on.
Yeah. Yeah.
Iraqi TV.
Yeah, they were proud of it, too.
They tried to demoralize the Baathists, but not really.
Yeah.
Or, as far as I can tell.
No,
it's not like they stopped fighting over there after that.
Did I mention that I'm recording in the new apartment?
You were talking about you just moved over there. How did it work? How's the internet going there?
Well, that's what I'm trying to figure out. Cause I got a cable splitter and I'm trying to fiddle with it to see if it can run through my TV. And I feel like in order for me to watch TV, I can't use the internet. And if I try using the internet while the cable is running, the internet craps out. So I'm playing with some splitters that I have to see which one. Maybe it's just a faulty splitter. I thought it was a cool. Because I had a cord in there that wasn't doing the job, and then I switched out with another cord or cable, and now it seemed to be running fine. I don't, unless it's just my internet service provider that decided to crap out when I was trying to fiddle with it, but, and then, what I've got is last weekend I picked up a used DVR record, or DVD recorder, and I got it from a Christian thrift store for like $10. And it doesn't have a remote, but however, I can just run everything from the DVD recorder. And it's fantastic. It's beautiful. I might just have to get a universal remote for it, to be honest. It'll probably work fine that way.
They probably have the remote on eBay or something for cheap, but I don't know. But yeah, you can probably get some third-party remote that can control, like,
yeah.
Multiple kinds of
Because I was thinking about using this to replace my VHS player or my VCR, which my VCR I'm still having on my shelf to play tapes in case I want to play tapes. But if I can record all my shows on DVD high quality, and so then I can rip that to my computer, then I'll just do that. So I'll look at some options for like universal remotes this weekend and just see what's out there.
But then you won't have theft commenting everything and recording something.
You're using VHS? He puts a giant question mark, like, you know, you're using VHS? Wow, you're so old. It's like, I thought hipsters like that crap.
No, he likes 1080p quality on everything. You watched that Adam Sandler movie that was on Netflix in 4K, The Hateful Eight or whatever.
Oh, yeah. Well, my other idea is the fact that what I was thinking of doing is getting, because like my room is this middle bedroom in a 3-bedroom apartment that I'm sharing with my brother and my parents for the time being until I get out of college. So my bedroom is actually like facing the it's the windows face is facing the patio that I have, and in the patio closet is our cable box, or like we have like a knockout box that you can get to our cable wires. So if the splitter idea doesn't work, what I'm thinking is see if I can use another cable port that's in there that's not being used, and route that underneath my window and use that as like my cable wire, and just hook that straight up to like my my DVD recorder. So then I have better quality, like have a better quality picture when I record stuff. So that's sort of a plan B, but I'm trying with these splitters. So hopefully, because like I don't understand why when I use, you know, I'm using a splitter, one side of it is directly for the internet. It's not interfering with the other side, which is for my video, but yet it just acts like it just can't do anything. So I'm just kind of fiddling with it right now, which I'll just do that tomorrow before I go to school. And yeah, moving wore me out yesterday so much, and it didn't help that the cat was freaking crying all night. So,
maybe I get to sleep better tonight if the cat's calm.
Yeah, I think the cat will be fine. But I've got a bunch of my stuff in my closet. The rest of it is out, like in my storage closet and in the garage with my Initial D cabinet or my arcade cabinet. So it's just a matter of getting that stuff up here this weekend and just kind of figuring out where to place it, which I kind of have a good idea, sort of. But it's just one of those things I'm just taking my time with, so.
Okay.
But yeah, so. Also, I talked to Jake from Right Stuff, and he said that he took care of our address problems. So you should be able to get everything in the mail from Right Stuff to your new address instead of being sent to your old one.
Yeah, I got Victory Gun in today.
Nice.
After giving them the, you know, money because they wanted it for that and Star's Counterattack. But
did you already look at Star's Counterattack yet on Blu-ray?
I didn't put it in yet. No.
Okay. Because I think I asked this in the last recording we did, which was Magic Users Club, and I was like, because I just kind of felt like the quality of the Blu-ray, it just feels like kind of grainy, to be honest. It just doesn't look that sharp. So I didn't know if you felt that same way or not too.
I'll have to look through it again.
Yeah, I don't know if it's like one of those things where they found like a Laserdisc master and just like, yeah, we'll just upscale this the best we can.
Yeah. I don't know. I think that all the Japanese remasters, since they only release them as DVDs, if there's not like a Blu-ray version out in Japan yet, like the X Turn A are only available on DVD right now, but they're gonna re-release Turn A on Blu-ray next year, I think.
No, Victory Gun looks very sharp. It's in 4x3, but like it's a very sharp 1080p 4x3.
That's good.
And like I saw that, and then I saw Char's Counterattack, and I was like, "Whoa, that doesn't look that good."
Yeah, Victory deserves a good release after.
Yeah, well, I was mentioning Char's Counterattack. I mean, Victory looks great.
Yeah,
we'll have to do a product review of that.
We'll do like a general.
Yeah, that's the best way to do it. Like, I've still got a Build Fighters Try to watch.
Did you watch the first Build Fighters?
I saw that when it was coming out on the Gundam Info website. I haven't even looked at the Blu-rays yet. I haven't even listened to the dub for either of those yet, so I have no idea what they sound like. I was going to... Do we have anything else for closing remarks? Because otherwise I was going to close out with a song.
Yeah, I think
all right. So, what I feel like, I feel inspired to try to sing my version of Heart of Madness with... Why it took me such a long time to watch Fist of the North Star. So I'm going to try to ad-lib this best I can. So you just cue up the bass theme where it's like dun 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 dun. And then I'm just kind of, you know, throw in something like, it's been such a long, long time since Dustin popped in a fist of the North Star DVD. He got it from, it was, came in the mail that was on the way from Amazon.com. It's $25 sale. Oh, look at that awesome fight. Yuria was the final South Star General. Da-da-da-da-da-da. Oh man, this couldn't get any better. Holy crap, I'm finally glad I watched this. Sleeping in my bed with the TV on. John, give me the mic. We gotta do a podcast recording about this. Ease my pain. Ease my loneliness. Man, I could have not have botched this song any worse.
It'll sound better once you have
background. Once I mix the music together.
Right.
And then just have that as our ending theme to finalize Fist of the North Star. So
they must have a different theme for Fist of the North Star too.
Yeah, it's a tough boy. Alright, so we're gonna go ahead and close this out. After 5 years.
We got about an hour and a half here, so that's pretty good.
Been such a long, long time. About 5 years since I saw last time the Fist of the North Star. Actually, wait, no, that's when we started. 3 years, really.
Since you first saw it.
Yeah, first saw it. Alright. Good night, everyone. Enjoy Heart of Madness. Hopefully this works out okay. Probably not.
Yeah.
Alright. Alright. Later.
See ya.
Well, everyone, Merry Christmas. Merry Christmas to all of you from the Anime of Yesteryear podcast. It's me, Dustin, your humble host with, I guess, not the most common sense. Anyways, so I've got one more parting gift for you listeners on this podcast. And that is from the help of Sean Ryan and Kevin Gray of Alpha Counter, or formerly Alpha Counter, which many years ago they did a Christmas special on Hokuto no Ken. And so, since that website is long gone, and those two have gone off to do bigger and better things, I will go ahead and present that long-lost treasure of a Christmas episode for Fist in the North Star for you guys to enjoy on this podcast as our kind of a nice zinger to end out the holiday season, or at least on the Christmas Day special that I have for this. So you guys kick back and enjoy the Yuletide carols of punching and kicking the Fist of the North Star way. Enjoy.
But no, yeah. But we have a gift.
Yeah, we decided we're going to correct that empty void that is the lack of a Christmas episode of Fist of the North Star. So what I did was I took 'Twas the Night Before Christmas, and I kind of gave it a nice Fist of the North Star twist. And we're going to call this the Fist of the North Pole, or Ho Ho Hokuto no Ken.
Very well done, my friend.
So how would you like to just start things off?
Okay. You wrote this. I expect you to start this off.
Okay. 'Twas the fight before Christmas in 1990X. Gangs terrorized townsfolk buried up to their necks. They raped and they plundered, kicked puppies and sneered. A post-apocalypse wasteland ruled by savagery and fear.
The children were enslaved to haul Souther's bricks, while the army of God mowed down grandmas for kicks. An old man and his family thought they could flee, but they weren't getting away with that sack of rice seed.
My boys beat them with chains and drank all their water, while I fixed my boot firm on the head of their daughter. They'll make great examples, for there is a cost on those failing to respect the mighty Southern Cross.
Fearing her last breath, the child let out a cry. My men all took pause, but then quick look behind, where out on the horizon we saw coming afar a dusty dune buggy and a man with 7 scars.
He leapt from his seat and came at us full sprint. The gang looked at each other and all yelled, "Holy shit!" More rapid than eagles his punches they came. He whooped and he kiawed and he called them by name.
100 crack, column break, face-breaking fist, chest murder thrust, face-breaking kick. I barked, "That's Hokuto Shinken, I know who you are. You must be Kenshiro, Fist of the North Star."
His gaze was stone cold upon me without fear. I stood dumbstruck while he applied a white beard. Then a red velvet cap with a trim of white fur was set atop his crown. It was also absurd.
And then, in a twinkling, the girl had gone poof, and the desert soul gave way to the weight of my hoof. She nestled, now cradled in Ken's tender arm, her cheeks soaked with tears as he delivered her from harm.
He was dressed in all leather, with a lone shoulder pad, his red shirt rent to ribbons, his arms flexed scantily clad. The bundle of toys he had flung on his back would be my new prize once I sprung my attack.
His eyebrows how bushy, his armbands wrapped tight. This twerp stood a dwarf by my monstrous height. Inside the girl's cabin, Ken hummed Yuletide hymns, paying no mind that I'd follow him in.
He mounted a cow skull with a red Rudolph nose and hung every doorway with fresh mistletoe. He dressed a rogue tumbleweed with glass bulbs and canes. We'd all heard Lord Shin's warnings, but this guy's insane.
He'd kill all my men, but that was no chore. I called, "Don't turn your back, I'll not be ignored." A crack of his knuckles and a swift threatening glance soon gave me to know I'd just wet my pants.
He spoke not a word, but went straight to his work, and filled all the stockings, then said, "Your turn, jerk." And laying a finger upon my low brow, a shot clock appeared, timed 7 seconds from now.
He sprang to his buggy, to bat gave a whistle, and away they all flew like the down of a thistle. But I heard him exclaim, while blood sprayed from my head, "Happy Christmas to all,
you're already dead."
Very nice.
Guys, Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays from the Method to Madness podcast and AlphaCounter.com. Have yourself a joyous holiday, and as always, thanks for listening.
Take it easy, folks. Merry Christmas and Happy Holidays.
Frosty the Snowman was a jolly, happy soul, with a corncob pipe and a button nose and 2 eyes made of coal. Frosty the Snowman is a fairy tale, they say. He was made of snow, but the children know that he came to life one day. There must have been some magic in that old snowman's hand, for when they placed it on his head, he began to dance around. Frosty, frick, I missed that. Oh well, what do you guys care? It's YouTube. Oh, Frosty the Snowman, he was alive as a... fuck.
I bet you I can keep this song recording still. Give me that mic. Gonna do a podcast about it. Come on, man. Gotta give me props. Gotta give me props. Singing a Heart of Madness song. Oh, Discotheque. You didn't ease my pain or my loneliness because you lost the rights. Dadgummit, get it back so more people can enjoy this. Alright, this is really ending for now.